Hi, and welcome to Curious Conversations, the podcast where curiosity meets connection. Thanks for joining as we discuss captivating stories and ideas and engage in thought-provoking conversations with experts, enthusiasts, and everyday people. We hope to ignite a curious spirit as we embark on a quest for understanding one curious conversation at a time. So let's jump in this together. Welcome to the world of Curious Conversations. And welcome to Curious Conversations. We are your hosts, Carly and Mandy, and today we're talking about a true crime case that hits pretty close to home for those living in the area of Northwest Georgia.
That's right. And today I am going to be interviewing Carly about her adventures with some cyber sleuthing. We want to mention that we will be discussing some pretty heavy topics, including in-depth explanation of murder by violence, and other content which could be disturbing to our listeners, so please be advised.
Yeah, definitely not for little ears this week. You know what? But before we dive in, we want to share with you this week's curious dish. And this is the part of our show where we dish about the most curious thing we've seen this week. So, Mandy, you want to kick us off?
Okay, so I didn't see this, but I heard this and I've got a pretty good visual. So my stepson went to work for a company and, you know, I won't name any names on anything because he's still in training, but they, so they basically monitor, driverless vehicles.
Oh
yeah.
That gives me anxiety. Just the words.
Right? Yeah. You know what I'm picturing? Jurassic Park. Yeah. And they're just like hop in the back and they're done for. But yeah, so that's his position. He monitors these cars and I'm thinking, okay, they're only in a few states, at least with this company. And I'm like, what do you do though? Like you're just sitting at a screen watching. But okay, so this is the thing that stood out. I'll make this short and sweet. So one thing they do is like drop a little, I don't know, I don't want to say a pellet, but for somebody who's dumb about this, we're going to say that because I keep picturing like Pac-Man. But so if one of these vehicles, sometimes they get quote unquote confused. And so they need to find direction again. And so you drop a little something that's like, oh, okay, I need to go that way. And so all this is digital and they're giving them little, I guess like little bots of something. So they go over there. I'm sure they don't call it bots, but, you know, it's something to redirect the vehicle so that it gets them back on track.
Wow.
Is that weird?
Okay. That's a little strange, but I like it. That's interesting.
It's very interesting. So my understanding, though, is a lot of people use this, but they're not always liking it. So they're trying to improve that.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What you got?
Well, you know, so mine is not necessarily something I saw this week, but it is something that I did experience this week. So I recently went on a trip. We were kind of just going to help someone out, and it was a 10-ish hour drive. It was a pretty long drive, and we needed to do that through the night. It was a rushed thing, kind of an emergency thing. And so long story short, I ended up spending 2 days in a vehicle with very little sleep, and I do not do well with very little sleep. It was just an uncomfortable experience, you know, not being able to really stretch out, and it was straight there, straight back. So just uncomfortable. But when I got home, there was just this almost a euphoria of being out of the vehicle and back in my bed and, you know, all those little things you take for granted. And, you know, I've looked into that before and I find this so interesting. It is curious, but we get so comfortable in our comfortable lives. that we start to complain about, you know, the things that are making us comfortable. And sometimes the human brain needs to be put into a situation where you're just kind of pushed a little bit. And I find that fascinating. You know, my fiance does ice baths, which is something I would never, ever like voluntarily do. If I got pushed in, I'd be mad. You know, I just,
right?
Those. Yeah. Don't want to be cold in the morning, but you know, he'll just plunge right in there like it's nothing. But you know, pushing your body to that place of such discomfort, you know, and there's stuff that goes on, endorphins and things that I won't even try to, you know, pretend like I understand. But you know, you just find that newfound respect for the little things, and you start to realize that, you know, you've been in that situation where that fight or flight kicks in and you realize regular life is not like that and you can just kind of chill and enjoy it. And so I have a newfound respect for people who are in uncomfortable situations long enough to be able to come out of them and to see things differently. I experienced that. It was very, very small scale, but I did experience that a little bit.
Yeah, that's curious in the side too, not to even go too far off with our curious dish, but that sleep deprivation can get you in a weird, now some curious things can come from that.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Just, yeah, hallucinations and strange dreams when you do get to fall. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that's an episode. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think it is. Well, for this episode, let's just hop right in. So I know you've been interested in true crime cases and like web sleuthing for quite some time now.
Yeah, I have been. Yep.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think we know a little bit about everything about each other by now. I'm thinking so. Yes. So I want to get to that. But first, well, I know you do have a naturally curious personality. We clicked right off the bat in that way. Tell us a little bit about that, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have always had a natural curiosity about people, a desire to connect with people on an intimate level. And this has been true for as long as I can remember. You know, you and I talked on our first episode about that. And even as a child, you know, what was considered to be nosy, I think, you know, it appeared nosy, but it was, I wanted to know how other people lived. I wanted to know what their interests were. I wanted to know their backstory. And, you know, I think that fueled my desire to write and to create stories and to create characters. And also, you know, something we've talked about as part of the inspiration for this podcast, you know, that natural curiosity is something you and I share. And I think what puts us in such a great place to host a show about natural curiosities and other people's stories, you know, and that carried over into adulthood. You know, I still have curiosity about people. And if you're sitting beside me in a restaurant, there's a good chance I'm listening into your conversation, and not for any reason other than the simple fact that I want to know where you came from and what you do day to day. I'm so interested in experiencing things that I kind of have to live vicariously through other people, which I think all writers do, you know? But, yeah, you know,
I was just going to say, do you catch yourself sometimes and you think, stop, you're not a child. Stop listening. Stop looking. It's time to look away now.
Yes. Pay attention to the person at your own table.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I just like to see what other people have going on. And I think, you know, I couldn't decide on a major in college because I wanted to do so many things. I wanted to experience so many things. So, you know, I started nursing school. I ended up switching my major to education, did some student teaching. And then I moved on into psychology and counseling. And now I do these little certificate programs. I have so many of them. It's just ridiculous. But I have this need to dig in to so many areas of life. So being able to hear about those things from other people, I can do that vicarious living. And it kind of satisfies that need a little bit for me.
Yeah, I get that.
Now, and I think you'll understand this, there's a dangerous side to that as an empath. Sure. Because there can sometimes be a desire to get involved and fix things. So I definitely have to be really careful to figure out like what I have capacity for and be selective in what I get involved with.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. You know, you have to kind of pull yourself back. And we talked about that recently with the interview when you interviewed me, you know. So I know that you really got your start with cyber sleuthing, as we say, in a peculiar circumstance. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, this is always a fun story for me. I'm a very sentimental person. And one day I found a book in an antique store. And it was one of those like letters from grandma type books, you know, where you can write in for future generations to read. And it was full of questions, and some sweet lady had taken the time to write down, you know, all kinds of memories and answer all the questions that it talked about her upbringing, her life, raising her children. And this was all just meant for her grandkids. And there are first names in the book for her grandchildren. No idea how this book ended up in an antique store. But that's where I found it. So I took it to the counter. And of course the lady's like, this is written in, you know, and I explained to her that that was exactly why I wanted it. You know, I wanted those things. I wanted to read them. But more importantly, I really wanted to track down the family of the lady, because surely there was someone in the family line that would cherish that book. You know, could you imagine someone in your family, you know, that's gone, and then to be able to get a book full of their writing? I just knew there had to be someone out there that would want that book.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And the woman at the counter, she mentioned that they get boxes donated all the time that have personal items and family photos and journals and diaries and, you know, things that are personal. And they don't keep them, because what are they supposed to do with them? You know, they can't sell those things.
Yeah.
And she asked me if I'd be interested in picking them up and trying to locate family members for them. And I was, obviously. So, I've had the opportunity to kind of return things to families that are not replaceable. And right now I'm working on a box full of travel journal pages and pictures from a couple that went on a trip with some friends of theirs. And somehow all of these memories were just thrown into a wooden chest that was donated to an antique store. And I just know I can find someone from the family and the right person. And I'm really excited to do so. And so that really just got me into needing to use the internet for things and to track people down and to just kind of do some investigating on that side. So that's kind of where that came from.
Yeah, I love that. And that's such a sweet way to do that. You know, I'm sentimental too. And so the thought of somebody, you know, passing and their personal items are there, something that they took time to write down. I mean, I guess that's anybody who's thoughtful and likes to journal, or they want to keep things. What they're wanting probably is to be remembered and to share that information, and to think it might have just got trashed or something. That's sad.
Yeah, you know, I know you are. You keep things like I do. You know, things that handwriting or that belong to someone, and there's so much attachment to those items. And I think of things that, you know, maybe I lost along the way in life and really regret that. And, you know, and I do understand there are some kids that probably are just cleaning out grandma's attic and don't even realize what they're looking at, because I was young once and maybe would have done that. But then as you get older, you think, man, I wish I had some of those things. And so it's a determination to get things back to the family they belong in.
Yeah. So what I hear you saying too, is that kind of touches on a couple different parts of who you are. You like that there's that sentimental, thoughtful aspect. And then there's that, you know, just working your brain, working your energies to find something, to solve something. It's that solving a puzzle kind of, analytical part of you.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. It's a good combo. Okay, so from there, you really got involved, we're going to switch here, with several true crime cases. Let's talk about that. Where does that interest come from? That's different.
That is different, you know, and I don't really know where that switch came, except that, you know, I was able to meet some key people in my life who did have an interest in that. And I'm definitely not into the sensationalism of it. You know, I watch Netflix documentaries just like the next guy, but I like the personality, the personal side of it, I'm sorry, of just having a family involved, and you're looking into things as a way to help a family. And I think that's where that draw came from, was, you know, I like helping people, and I like that, you know, digging in detective type work. And so, yeah, I think when you put those two things together and there are actual people on the backside of it, you know, it becomes something so much more. I've done the games, you know, the board games where you're trying to solve a murder mystery and things like that. And that's all fun. You know, I like to do those with groups of friends and stuff. But when you've got people behind it, it becomes, it's just a different level of caring and empathy for other people.
Sure. I mean, that sort of brings everything together. You know, in the fact that you talked about being kind of a fixer and getting involved with other people's stuff, and then the analytical part, and it all comes together, you know. So you're involved in a couple of cold cases, but before we talk about that, do you have a case, like solved or unsolved, that is or was of high interest to you? I know they all are, but...
Yeah, I do have one that really sticks out. It was probably the most interesting case that I've looked into. It was solved. It's absolutely solved. And the person involved has been released. I believe in rehabilitation, so I don't want to mention his name, but the details of that, it's unnerving. It's very gruesome. And I find myself trying to figure out, you know, why some people spend the rest of their lives in prison or are executed. That's something, you know, we've talked about on a past episode of was that the right method? Was that the right outcome? But, you know, some people are executed or they're in prison for the rest of their lives for their crimes, and others don't seem to pay the extent for what they did. And it definitely, this is a case that raised those questions in my mind. And it's a crime that happened very close to home for people living in a town that I recently moved from. And that's Calhoun, Georgia. So this is a crime that happened in the early 90s, and there isn't a lot of information about it. So if you really, I mean, if you've not heard it passed down as a story, there's a real possibility you don't know about it. I mean, I asked people about it, you know, trying to get some additional information, and I had the hardest time. Most people just weren't even aware that it happened. People that lived in the town, you know, their whole lives weren't aware that it even took place.
I didn't know until you told me.
I asked you about it. You know, it was, and it was kind of, I thought, a bigger deal.
It should be.
But, yeah. Well, I'm going to shed some light on this one. Well, it happened in a very popular fast food restaurant called Bojangles, and that Bojangles is still standing and serving food today. They block traffic on the road, and I hear people don't like that, but they just might be doing something right. I first heard about the story from a past coworker of mine. She was working at the restaurant at the time of the murder, and she mentioned to me that she was supposed to be closing one particular night, and she was going to a concert with a friend, and so her manager let her leave early. She went to her concert, and then she remembered that she hadn't picked up her paycheck. They were in the building. And so she, along with her friend, drove back to Bojangles. And the manager's car was still in the parking lot. And so she knocked on the door. She was banging on the windows. I mean, they were trying to like get his attention, thinking he's in the back, you know, counting money or doing inventory or whatever a manager does. Sure. After the restaurant closes, she couldn't ever get him to come to the door. And so she went home, she went to sleep. The next morning, cops are banging on her door and they're asking about her activity the night before, because the manager's body was found in Bojangles by the early morning crew.
Gosh, could you imagine? They show up at your door, and you're like thinking all the worst things, and it literally is the worst thing.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, you've been at a concert, she's probably tired, and then to have that banging on your door. I don't ever want cops banging on my door anyway.
No, I don't want to be in trouble for anything. That's what that indicates to me, is trouble when the cops are banging on your door.
Yeah. I wonder if she went through a checklist of, did I do something?
What did I do last night?
Wrong. Well, so here I'm going to get a little gruesome. The manager of the restaurant was found that morning in a pool of his own blood. And I don't just mean he's laying in a pool of it. It was smeared kind of everywhere, all the way back to the men's restroom. He was found in the kitchen area. So the restaurant was just, I can't imagine the scene that the morning crew must have walked into. His ankles were bound with a hand towel. Police reports said that he had at least 4 stab wounds in his chest, which tells me at a glance, that must have been a mess for them to say. Yeah, that is gruesome. At least 4.
It's gruesome and heartbreaking when you hear something that that over the top, you know, that violent.
Absolutely. This was 100% fueled by violence, just anger. There was something there.
Yeah.
His throat had been slashed. There was blood smeared across his face. He had several lacerations on, I think it was his left eyebrow and the center of his forehead. Additional lacerations found on the top portion of his scalp, blood smears on both of his hands and his arms. He did have some defense wounds on the palm of one of his hands. And you could see where someone had tried to use a mop to clean up the blood around the body, and it really had just smeared it on the floor. It was everywhere. And this poor guy's teeth were even collected off of the floor by law enforcement. His teeth were no longer in his head. It was just truly gruesome.
Yeah, no doubt. That's this, when we talked about this before, this case really disturbed me on so many levels. And I don't want to get too much into personal opinions on thing, but it is shocking. Like, it is one of the more shocking cases. It just hit all the weird, you know, notes, and very disturbing. And that's what happens with me with true crime. I get it hits the disturbing aspect, the heartbreaking, you know, being sensitive. You're like, oh my gosh, this guy's family, this guy, you know, what's he thinking? What's he feeling? It's just a terrible thing to consider. And then that analytical part, like, okay, why did somebody do this? Where did this come from? So, you know, tell us some more, because I know you're going to probably hit all those things I just mentioned.
Yeah, well, okay, so there was a gentleman that was picked up for questioning by the police, as he had been at the scene and should have been the last person in the building with the victim. So he was actually an employee. He had been let go either earlier that day or the night before because of some attendance issues. And in his interview, he stated that he had returned to Bojangles that evening, and he had pleaded with the manager for his job back. The manager agreed, and they closed together that night. Him leaving the manager in the building when he left for the evening, the manager was still in the building, and he had left him unharmed. That was his story. However, when they asked for the uniform that he was wearing that night, it had been laundered and still had the victim's blood clearly visible on it. There were blood. It was found on his tennis shoes. It was a definite, okay, something's not right. Your story definitely does not add up.
Wow.
So, yeah. What actually happened that night was the gentleman returned to find the manager working alone because the girl had been let leave early, you know, to go to her concert. He did wait until closing. He attacked the victim with a gallon can of beans, you know, those big, oversized,
yeah, they're heavy. Huge.
Yeah, absolutely heavy. which is where all of the facial lacerations and head lacerations came from. So that did not kill the victim. So he then tried stabbing him in the chest, which apparently that didn't work either. And I think he was quoted as saying, the something, something, I won't use the words he used, just wouldn't die. He was air quoted.
That's terrifying.
That is terrifying. And then just to be able to say that so nonchalantly is, I don't understand.
I don't understand either, but my brain starts trying to understand. It's like it clicks and it puts you into that mode. Okay, what could that be? Could that be drugs? Could that be, you know, mental frailty? Could that be someone who has some disorder and they just see red? You start going that way with your thought process because you want to understand why in the world somebody doesn't see a human for a human.
Yeah, it's like you and I have talked about before. It's hard to, you know, kill a spider in the house. I don't understand being able to watch a life end at your hands.
No.
Well, he ended up, bless his heart, the guy, the stabbing didn't work either. And so the guy ended up slashing his throat, and that's what ended his life. Meanwhile, the two girls that had gone to the concert, they show up at the scene banging on the door. So in the police records, the guy said that he saw them at the door. He knew it was another employee, and that he held up a finger, you know, motioning for them, like, wait a minute. And at some point they were just gone. I don't know if they got tired of waiting. You know, they had banged on the door long enough. She did not say that she saw him in the building at all. She didn't see anyone, which is why she was banging on the door. So that is where that mama heart kicks in. You know, you've got a little girl banging for her paycheck. She's not even seeing. But when I read that in the police report, it was shocking that he did see her. And motioned scary. For her to wait, you know, and I really think those girls dodged a bullet that night, you know.
Yeah, and worse.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh,
I can't imagine had they been more persistent or, you know, in getting the manager's attention, or if they would have seen him, you know, the guy and made eye contact or tried to talk with him if they'd been allowed to enter the building. I can't imagine.
Yeah, so that makes me reconsider the times when you're trying to push through something like a way home, traffic, whatever it might be, fill in the blank, and you think, you know, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get through here. Maybe that resistance is like a protection. I know, I don't know what everybody believes, but I'm thinking, you know, it's a good thing that didn't follow through for them.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes maybe there's, you know, if you believe in God or a higher power of some sort, maybe sometimes there's a barrier there that should be paid attention to.
Gosh, I'm counting on it.
Yeah.
I'm counting on protection.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'm going back to that empathy thing. When I first heard about that, it did bother me. That kept me up for a while. And I was thinking of her. But I was thinking of the victim, and the victim had a family. He had a mother that had to be contacted. And as a mom, I cannot imagine that phone call. It's all very sad. It's hard to understand why there's a man walking free today, you know, and that isn't my call to make. And I don't know where he stands on his journey. He did pay the debt that he was given by court officials. And he has to answer to a higher power one day, and maybe he has all of that cleared up too. So, you know, I choose not to spend a lot of energy worrying about things I have no power over. But quite frankly, I don't have the desire to have that kind of power. You know, it's I don't know how judges do it every day. You know, people have to sit on juries, and that's something. It's very serious. That's something to take very serious because you're talking about another person's life. So,
yeah, no, I don't want that responsibility. And I just want to sit here and, you know, you can know these things, you think about what you would or wouldn't do, but I don't want that in my hand. I don't want the pen to sign off on anything. I'll just leave it at this. It is the most curious thing in the world to me that he is free. And I don't know all the reasoning there. I really don't. But it's a very interesting, disturbing story. And, you know, I like that we will continue to bring these kind of stories that people do find interesting, they do want to know about, and then, you know, have that compassionate side of telling the story, you know, at both angles. I hope we can always do that. Gosh.
Yep. Absolutely. I think it's important to, you know, sometimes those things are just, it's curious. And so, you know, you've got that desire to want to know more. And then you have cases that are open that are there's a way to help. There's things that can be done. And so I think there's, you know, a definite difference between the two, but just to know what has happened in your own hometown, I think is important. And to have that, you know, that sympathy for other people, that's just human nature, is we love other people and we care for other people. And so you kind of get drawn into that and that side of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've talked about that multiple times, how you, you know, you have the one side that you're interested about and why somebody's mind works the way they do. And you never want to support that angle or anything like that. You're just curious about the human mind, about human nature. And then, you know, the protection you feel and the sensitive feelings you have over a victim, it's overpowering. And I completely agree with what you're saying about, you know, basically choose where you put your energy, because some of it is fruitless. It will absolutely go nowhere to dwell on in it. But some of these stories, this one is one for me. It's sort of hard to release that from your mind. Mm-hmm. Once you've heard it, you think of all the things and, well, you know, you've got multiple stories, they might not all be as, dramatic or as graphic as this one, but, I know there are more. So what would you say is the biggest thing you're working on right now?
I would say right now, I'm actually working with a team and we are focusing on the Keislin Roberts case. So my part in that is pretty small. I try to bring awareness. I definitely am looking for opportunities to help the family in any way that I can. And I'll just do a really quick overview for those who aren't familiar with Keislin Roberts. He is a young adult that went missing from the Flying J truck stop in Resaca, Georgia. And that was 4 years ago. She entered the employee area of a Flying J. That was January the 18th, 2020. She did appear to be concerned about something or someone. She was kind of, when they found her in the kitchen area, she was kind of crouched down like she was maybe hiding. And so that definitely kind of piqued my interest a little. It wasn't just a fluke thing of she just was gone. There was definitely something bothering her. She exited through the employee exit door in the back. She left behind many of her belongings, backpack, money, you know, her ID. They're just things that you wouldn't normally leave behind if you weren't rushed out of somewhere. But one thing she did not leave behind was her cell phone. Her cell phone was never recovered. It pinged there that evening and it pinged 4 months later somewhere, you know, but that the child was never seen again. After she exited that door, there was an employee that went to the door and looked out to make sure she was okay. It was dark, it was rainy. And she never made it home again. And my involvement with the Keislin case is so strong because I met her parents. That was really the first time I heard the details of the story. I was sitting with her mom and her dad, who are just, I can't even describe the torment that they still live through every single day, 4 years later. It was a heart-wrenching moment for me, and I've just not been able to let that go since.
Oh, I bet. I can't imagine. You talk about feeling people's feelings and all this and getting involved. Like, I just don't even know that I want to hear that firsthand, because I do just linger with some of these thoughts. And as a parent, you think of all the things that they're thinking and that you would think. And I don't know how you get any peace with that. Obviously, you know, a resolution, answers, maybe there's some peace there. I hope so. But just to think that you don't know something makes me feel very panicky.
Yeah. You know, to not have that closure, it's just an open, who knows? So to put that into perspective with your own children, you think, gosh, you know, I know where my kids are all the time. And if I don't, it's a phone call. Hey, where are you? You know,
right.
So to not have that peace of mind, to not have that closure, just to not have a body even to lay in the ground if she is gone, just to have that peace of she's back with us and we have taken care of her, I cannot imagine what they must feel about that. There are a lot of details that simply do not add up in this particular case. And that has led to concerns of kind of the validity of what the community has been told about the case. And that's kind of where we're, you know, as a team, we're digging into that and trying to figure out, how we can best support the parents. I'm working on an episode for us for Curious Conversations. That goes kind of into the details of the case. But not just that, it's how folks can get involved, because that's what's important. We have to stand as a community and say, hey, something's not right. Something, you know, terrible has happened. Just kind of getting the word out about how people can be involved in that. And then the team that I'm working with, you know, they're from that community and they have an interest in the case. And so we're putting together a mini series to hopefully bring that awareness and to shine some light on maybe some of those lesser known theories that are out there, and possibly encourage someone with some knowledge of what could have happened to come forward, because someone knows something.
Yeah, I love that you do this. And, I'm looking forward to learning more. You and I have talked about it, but every time we talk, you know, there's something more you bring to light. And, I didn't follow this in the same way. And I find it very, you say that about the community coming forward, and that kind of hits my heart, because I'm thinking that's what's important here. That's what has to happen here. You have to have people come forward. You have to have people come together. Don't act like we're all just living separate lives. We're right here. We're in the same space. We're occupying the same space, you know, and as scary as it is in your previous story to think, hey, you could be standing beside somebody who's done something, you know, scary. You don't know. Well, you also could be standing beside somebody who knows something, somebody who's been in danger. There's all these things. And I just think that if we stay to ourselves, we keep to ourselves and we keep quiet, we're missing out on so many opportunities to help one another.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct on that. We're all kind of living and working in our own silos, and but if we can come together as not just a community, as a people group, people who have a heart, and I think that's what a lot of the web sleuths or the cyber sleuthers, there are some that it's all about the storyline or gaining views or the sensationalism of the stories. But I truly believe there are people out there who, you know, maybe they miss their calling somewhere, but they have a heart for people, and it's not what they do for their day job. This is not what I do for my day job. But you know, there's a desire to come together with other people that have an interest in that and a heart for maybe the family or, you know, the victim, and just finding answers. I think, you know, the people of that town, Resaca, Georgia, probably would really like to know what happened, because they have children that are, you know, walking around that town or, you know, riding the buses. Yeah. And you, like you said, you never know who you're standing beside.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't get any more curious than this episode. Like, we hit all the high notes here. And, you know, I can't wait to, you know, to learn more. I hope we learn some really good stuff about this case. And, you know, I love your analytical mind, and that you try to, you know, you're really good at trying to solve puzzles, try to look at things from different points of view, but your compassion really shines through that. You have a desire, and everything I've known you to do, you have a desire to, you know, for the good thank and for, to help. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, well, thank you for sharing. So it's fun to interview you. That's a different side of things. So I really enjoyed that. And I'm looking forward to hearing more and hearing the particular episode that you're talking about. So yeah, we'll look forward to that.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, listen, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, where we post exclusive content, contests, and so much more. And of course, you can keep up with our episodes through Podbean or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And as always, if you have a story that sparks curiosity, or you have something that you want us to talk about, just shoot us an email to ourcuriouspodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.